You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Greg Blaze, and on the line we have Brenda Jensen of Hidden Springs Creamery in Westby, Wisconsin. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Brenda.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. One of my favorite things about your website is that right on the top of the homepage, above a photo of you and your husband, Dean, you have it written in all caps, "I never planned on being a cheesemaker." So with that, I wanted to start off by asking you a little bit about your background and how you ended up being a cheesemaker if you never planned on it.
Sure. Well, I grew up on a little farm. My parents both worked off the farm, and we had just, you know, pets here and there, and we were the primary caretakers of those. But it was fun growing up. But then I went off into the business world, got a degree, got an MBA, was doing that sort of thing, and
yeah.
Really enjoyed working with people. And my husband and I married. We have a blended family. We both had children before in other marriages. And we got a little hobby farm, and he was really the push behind that hobby farm. He was a city kid and always dreamed of farming, and I realized it was work. And
I think
he knew that, really.
Yeah? I'm sure he found out pretty quick.
Yeah, we found out pretty quick. And he had a dream of milking something again, you know. He really didn't know what that was all about. And it was all his kind of romanticizing the whole farm environment.
You had the reality of that environment.
Yeah.
Cool. How did your experience before making cheese help you to start your business, to your MBA and all of that? It must have helped you out.
Well, definitely. I in the business world, doing some sales and marketing, working with people. The last job I had, we'll say, in that real world was an operations manager in a packaging plant. So I learned about labels and, you know, good labels, bad labels, good-looking labels, you know, all those kinds of things as along with good food practices, good manufacturing practices.
Sure.
Visiting Snickers plants and, you know, Mars plants and Rice Krispie plants, you know, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
And, it was a real learning experience for me.
I'm always fascinated with factories in general, you know. The processes there are so, they're so solid, you know, and that the processes are what run the building, you know. I mean, it goes against my nature somewhat, although I'm a process-oriented person inside, you know. But I'm always amazed at factories of all types, you know, and just how that assembly line works, you know. And I'm sure it meted out in the way that you produce your cheese and package it up and send it up too.
It does. It's kind of ingrained in me to try to do it the most efficient way.
Yeah.
And sometimes starting out small, real small, it takes you a couple years to think about, like, oh, yeah, I should be doing this, you know.
Sure.
It takes me half the time. But it happens, you know. You start to just think out, you know, back to the plant and how do they run things. And
right.
And why, and yeah, I do time studies, you know.
Yeah.
I time different jobs. I have a product flow on all my, every cheese I make. I know the cost, the time that goes into it, so I don't know if that's normal cheesemaker.
Well, it should be, if it isn't.
It's ingrained in me that way, so I know my costs of everything. I know how long it takes to do everything.
Awesome. Well, we carry you Driftless, your wonderful fresh cheese, which I really love. Was that the first cheese you made? And can you tell us a little bit about the name, what the Driftless means?
Oh, sure. It was the first cheese that we made. I had hooked up with the Dairy Business Innovation Center right away. We were milking sheep, and we were trying to come up with what cheese to make.
Yeah.
And I had this group that brought these different sheep cheeses from all over, and none of them really grabbed me. And I had tasted a Mitocrema from Spain.
Yeah.
Just really grabbed hold of me and wouldn't let go kind of thing. And I thought, yeah. And it was also not as complex in making. And so I wanted to start out not too complex. I had good milk, a new cheesemaker, and wanted to make something that I didn't have to store a long time either.
Right. That all makes sense. I mean, and all you're really doing, you're just acidifying the milk, right, and straining and then sending it along on its way, right? I mean,
hey, what a natural process, really. You know, a little salt, little enzymes,
yeah.
And you've got this wonderful cheese. And then I can remember I took it to my first farmer's market, and people were really wowed by it. I took it to my first sale. I sold my first cheese, the Driftless Natural, in La Crosse at the People's Food Co-op.
How cool.
They said to me, well, we'll take a case of every flavor. I went, oh, my gosh, I better get some flavors.
Get some flavors together. But the Driftless is a place, though, right?
It is. It's the Driftless area, and it runs a long span through Wisconsin into Minnesota. It's the unglaciated part of Wisconsin. So we've got the wonderful rolling hills, but a perfect place to raise dairy sheep. It's just a really nice, breezy atmosphere, not too hot, not too cold, just perfect. Good place to raise good grass and have dairy sheep out there on the pastures.
Awesome. Could you also talk to us a little bit about the story behind Bohemian Blue and your collaboration with Tony and Julie Hook?
Sure. I am first Bohemian, I think a little bit Bohemian by nature and by origin. My
nice.
Grandparents were Bohemian, Lucy and Louis Lestaka. And so I knew I wanted to make a blue, but with that fresh cheese in the plant and being a new cheesemaker, I really did not want to take a chance of damaging the Driftless cheese.
Yeah.
So good friend Tony Hook, who made the best blue cheese, we talked one night and decided that maybe we would do some sheep milk cheese and try it, and I asked him to make some. And so what we did is, in collaboration, we would split the batches kind of thing, and he would keep some of the cheese for him making it, and then I would take some for providing the milk. So, and there was also that tariff at the time. I don't remember if you remember back then that they were talking about this big tariff on.
I do.
On the Roquefort cheese.
Oh yeah.
And was it going to continue to sell? And so we thought this was great timing.
That's happened more than once, actually. I mean.
Oh, okay. Well, we're waiting for it to happen again.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I first remember that happening in the 90s, and maybe like 98 or 99, it was all about the banana tariff. We sort of went and cherry picked some European products to put 100% tariff on, and Roquefort was one of those. So it makes sense. I mean, sheep's milk cheese, I mean, sheep's milk for me is the best milk to make cheese out of, as a cheesemonger, you know, I gravitate towards sheep's milk. It's so rich and wonderful, and I feel like it fights back in all the right ways against the Roquefort culture that you add in, you know. So you get this like really solid wall of dairy, you know, and really finely sort of shown lines of blue, which I really like. Because the way it looks, as that helps to sell the cheese.
Yeah, that's correct. And Tony does a wonderful job with that cheese.
That's awesome. I read also that you have a bed and breakfast on your property. We've had other guests who on the show who find this to be a great additional revenue source. Have you seen that impacting what you do on the farm?
Well, I think that, you know, when we first started out, we had a little bit like my husband in a farm, no idea what time this would all take.
Right.
So making milk, making cheese, sales and marketing of cheese. So we actually don't have a lot of guests that stay. I hate to say it that I don't answer the phone very often at the bed and breakfast. I get a lot of calls. I've met some wonderful people. Some people want to come and spend the whole time with me.
Well, I'm sure.
And that makes it a little tough. They're wonderful people, and, you know.
Right.
It makes it a little tough to be able to go in the cheese plant, and I'm pretty particular. I'm really particular about
what
goes in the plant and
right.
that. So sometimes people have a little misunderstanding, I think, about how much time we can really spend together.
Right. Well, then I'm sure that they come there to see you, and maybe that hopefully everybody, they always want to be a part of the cheese making process. You know, they think it's something that they can just dip into. You know, I'm sure you get that. And I'm sure you don't want to let anybody in there into your plant.
That's about it, too. Everybody kind of wants to do it, and then you kind of want to let no one in there. You're exactly right.
It's just
the things that can happen. You know, if I think too hard, yep.
Don't think too hard, at least not now, not while you're with me. You know, you'd
right,
be good.
Right.
You'd be good. Let me just ask you a question back about the Driftless. Is that a seasonal thing for you, or do you have milk all year round?
We have milk year round now. We started out probably the first 5 years seasonally milking, and now we're milking year round, no break.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Milking year round and growing the herd as well.
Really?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I also I love your feta, too. And where did you get the recipe for your feta?
I had a cheesemaker here in Wisconsin by the name of Tom Torkelson came and taught me that feta recipe, and making cheese with him was just wonderful.
Oh, yeah?
You know, he's the kind of cheesemaker who, like me, you know, I'm smelling the milk, you know, I'm tasting it, I'm all through the process, I'm, you know, my feet are off the ground because it's just, I'm floating kind of thing, and that's how it was making the cheese with him. You could just tell the passion, and I think that really comes through in this feta. And then we put it in its own way, brine, which really adds to the flavor. And then we age it. You know, we like to age that 6-8 months at least, and it really gives it a wonderful flavor.
Yeah, it's super tangy, Ben, but the texture, the problem I have with a lot of feta is that the texture it's like a too sharp texture, you know? I always think feta should be like kind of yielding, you know, like yours is and fudgy even, you know? I don't know if I'm saying this right, but it's like bound a bit, the mass of curds bound together a little too tightly. Do you know what I mean? Like then it doesn't.
I kind of make it the way I like to eat it.
Yeah. That's awesome stuff. And then you have a little hard cheese, too, that you do, right?
I've got a few different hard cheeses. One is the Okooch Mountain. We just took a second place in the hard cheese category with that this year at the U.S. Cheese Championship.
Awesome.
Yeah, and we've got that in a couple different sizes. We make that in a smaller 2.5-pound wheel, and then we've got the Grande, which took a fourth place this year, which is it's about a 12 to 14-pound wheel, and then we wash that rind, and so it makes it a lot of love goes into that cheese, and we age that on the wooden boards and brine it a lot and brush it and age that out at least 6 months to a year.
Wow. Where'd your recipe derive from that?
Is it
French?
My favorite cheese, well, I shouldn't say my favorite, one of my favorite cheeses is Upland's Pleasant Ridge Reserve.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's an inspiration for that cheese, is that hard cheese, washed rind, and then the sheep milk does put a different swing on it. So, I guess that was our tribute to that. We love that cheese.
It's great. Sheep's milk Alpine cheeses are great. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And a rarity. I like a lot of the recipes, or a lot of my favorite sheep's milk, hard sheep's milk cheeses, come from the Pyrenees Mountains, and they have that sort of similar texture to yours. It's that word yielding, you know, and then compact and fudgy. Really good stuff. Yeah, man. We're going to take a slight break, and then when we come back, I'm going to talk to you about your sheep. stay with us. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. Before the break, we were talking to Brenda Jensen of Hidden Springs Farm in the great dairying state of Wisconsin. We were talking to her a little bit about her cheese and the stuff she makes and some things that inspired her to be, both become a cheesemaker and to make the wonderful stuff that she does. In this portion of the episode, I wanted to talk more about your sheep. So what is it like being a shepherd in cow territory, and is that a fair thing to say about Wisconsin?
Well, it is. People just don't even believe me when we say we milk sheep. They always say, "Oh, you mean goats, don't you?"
No, I don't.
we milk sheep. So it is. It's different. And I think once they taste the cheese, that's when they're taken back by it.
Hmm. So you get a lot. You get a lot of inquiries. But it's kind of a. Not a novelty, that's a weird word to use, but not the norm for milking animals in the state of Wisconsin.
That's correct. There's probably about 15 to 18 farms that are milking currently in Wisconsin sheep, so it's a small community, but I think we all do it very well.
That's cool. What breeds of sheep do you have and why?
We have the East Frisian, a German breed, and Lacombe, which is a French breed. The East Frisian would be the milk producers in the group, and the Lacombe would be the higher butter fat in the group.
Nice. How many do you have?
We've got about 1,000 sheep right now on the property.
Wow. And you said you're growing still?
And growing still, yes. You know, there's numbers. You know, I talked about those numbers. I got that MBA.
Yeah.
There's numbers that you have to, I believe, that you have to have and sustain on a farm in knowing how much per pound your milk costs. And then turning that into cheese certainly helps. But we really want to be profitable on the farm as well as on the cheese side.
And 1,000 is where you settle?
No. Not that we're profitable, but not that's. I don't believe that's where we settle. I think we're somewhat customer driven, somewhat how much our property can hold, though, as well.
Right. Well, that's the thing, right? You have to have enough grass for them all to eat.
Right. That's the thing, and you know they're not always eating grass. I mean, I look
right
out the window now, and there's, you know, snow on the ground.
It's coming
so
here.
They're not always eating grass, but we have great alfalfa for them, and they are supplemented that way. But we've got everything paddocked off. We do rotational grazing.
Yeah.
But they're also fed and have always access to hay as well.
That's great. Can you speak even more about your farming practices, and how do you think those affect the products you put in the market?
Oh, I think it's everything. I mean, I think it's probably the biggest benefit I have as a cheesemaker is that, I hate to use that word control, but that we do have that control and we know where that milk needs to be able to make good cheese. And so it's always the controlling factor is quality first on our farm. Quantity is there, but it's not the main factor. So we're constantly watching the numbers and doing testing, and herd health is a big thing. Vets are a challenge because it's not the norm. And to really specialize in dairy sheep wouldn't be, in a numbers game, it wouldn't be very profitable for a veterinary. But we do have help. We do have some help with the vet and that, but we've learned a lot through our own what works and what doesn't, and then that group of dairy sheep farmers also in the state who've been doing it longer than us.
I'm sure that they're always willing to give you a hand. It's true that as a cheesemaker, and you know, and I'm seeing this in the market now. You must be really happy that you know that you only are using your own milk. You know what I mean? There's like you said, there's so much less control. When you're purchasing milk from another source, right? I mean, that's adds a whole nother level and line of questions for you that you don't have to answer.
Definitely. I lose sleep over that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely the way to go for us to be able to have that control of that milk every milking, every sheep, and if that sheep isn't producing what the type of milk we want it to, we pull that sheep out of the group. We can either try to get that health back up, or it's going to have to go on to another place. So we'll just have to say it that way. But we take that very serious.
What's your biggest challenge in being a shepherd?
The biggest one. I think it's understanding the sheep and the health needs of these sheep. There's not a lot of they say every sheep in the United States, dairy sheep is related. And so getting new breeding in is really important or critical to, I think, the dairy sheep industry here in Wisconsin, or in the U.S.,
right,
actually. You just get the same, you're just going to multiply your problems.
So it's the health, or it's the overall herd health is your biggest hurdle.
Right.
That makes sense. How about the challenges of being a farmstead cheese producer? Like, what resources are out there for you?
Well, there used to be the Dairy Business Innovation Center in Wisconsin, but that is no longer there. I think it's really the other cheesemakers who've been doing this longer, and then also the farmstead producers themselves. It is kind of a challenge, though. Sometimes you can get very wrapped up and very busy in your own little world and forget, you know, that there's other folks out there that you can maybe talk to and lean on. So it is challenging. You get very inward thinking or looking sometimes, just being on the farm, and you don't leave sometimes for weeks, you know?
Yeah. But I do the same
again,
thing.
Sometimes, you know what, the best thing is I don't leave the farm for weeks.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, it's a two-edged sword kind of thing, because I really love where I live and what I do. So it's a blessing and a curse.
I do the same thing. I mean, you know, I work in a store, and we're busy all the time, you know, and you know, you want to get out there to see what other people are doing, you know, just to see, you know. I mean, I've always been a big proponent of doing my own homework. I don't check a lot on other businesses in a certain way. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm too invested in what I do, my own deal. But it is super helpful to just take your head up out of the pots, you know, and get out there, you know, and see what else is going on and see who else is doing what. It's good that you have a great community and like such a dairying history in Wisconsin, and that so that people are, I'm imagining, pretty forthcoming with information and with help.
Oh, it is. It's there's cheesemakers in the state who tell you anything you ask them. Some aren't that way, you know, but some just want to be helpful, because none of us really want to go copy each other. We want to just make the best cheese from our milk and what we do here at Hidden Springs. But yeah, they know some tricks of the trade kind of thing, and it's very helpful. Another thing is the American Cheese Society. Going to that every year really exposes me to good things. I mean, I just can't say enough about what kind of education, seeing people, that whole experience is great for me.
That's awesome. What's your favorite thing about raising sheep?
Could you repeat that?
What's your favorite thing about raising the sheep?
Sheep are just so sweet. They're just so pleasant. They don't get mean or angry. A little confused sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Always afraid, but they're just easy to work with. They don't kick you. They don't bite you. they're just a sweet, sweet, honest animal.
That's really cool. And do they give you milk as long as you keep them that way? You know?
Right. We say that we take good care of them, and they'll take good care of us. So we believe that.
You got it. You got it. Do you also use the other parts of your sheep, like in terms of the meat and the wool?
We don't. The dairy sheep aren't especially known for their meat. We do make some things. You know, we do have some calls. We'll make some great sausage.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing, but it's not our primary focus. So we do get the sheep shorn twice a year for hygiene purposes, but it doesn't make the best, you know, when you're cutting it two times a year.
Yeah.
It makes, but again, it's for our quality of product that we're making those decisions.
That's like everything you do, you fold back into your cheese making. That's really, you know, or that's how it seems to me, you know, and also as a purchaser of your cheese, you know, that's cool. And as an ending note, what would you say to an aspiring cheesemaker that wanted to raise some sheep? What would your advice to them be?
I would say to try to apprentice or partner with somebody who's been doing it for a while. It's such a learning curve to learn about the sheep and get that milk thing down before you go off and try to make cheese. To me, it had been too much. We were producing milk for about 5 years prior to even starting in the cheese business, and that might not have been long enough really to really give it justice, but it's a big learning curve.
Wait, what were you doing with the milk before you made the cheese? Were you selling it?
We were selling it to Old Chatham. We were freezing milk and selling it to out in New York to Old Chatham.
Pretty awesome. Well, I want to say thanks so much, Brenda, for coming on the phone with me today and just letting us know about your great dairy. And, you know, thanks for all the wonderful products you put out. And, you know, keep doing that because we'll keep buying it, I promise.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Have a great weekend and or great week, rather. And stay tuned for more Cutting the Curd. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.